Okay, good morning. Let me call the Mesa City Council study session of Thursday, November 16th to order. We've got seven items. First one is to review items for the November 20th regular council meeting. We have a pretty extensive packet. If you want to find the copy of that, we'll proceed through. Anything on page one? I see we have a predetermined Pledge of Allegiance. How did that come about? We usually do Boy Scouts. Does anybody know how Mary Vance became the pledger? Or did somebody find out for me? All right, that's page one. Page two, we have some annexations, public hearings for minor plan amendments. Page three, additional general minor plan amendments, public hearings.
Mayor and Council, if I may, on page four, by now with the general plan amendments, we have 7A and 8A and B with regard to the general plan amendments in Stone Mountain, and later in the packet have the rezoning case. There is a development agreement that goes along with this particular zoning case. I mentioned this to you at the introduction. We've been working with the applicants on this development agreement. We've given them a draft. They are going to be getting back with us on that draft this afternoon. And so we'll give you an update on Monday on how close we are on having a development agreement that we can work with.
Okay. And you're referring to which item again here?
Stonebridge, it's items 7A and B, 8A and B, and then the rezoning case, which is 13S.
All right. I'm on page 2, 4A, 4B, and then 5, 5A, 5B.
I thought I'd gotten over to page 4 already.
Oh, you're to page 4. All right. I'm trying to match up these numbers there. All right. Okay. All right. Vice Mayor.
I actually have a question about that one. I don't even know if I can talk over my stack of papers here. Mm-hmm. It has to do with what we're doing when we do each of these. So when we do the general plan amendment, what we're doing is we're amending the general plan. You're telling us you have a development agreement, but that isn't part of a general plan amendment. So when we vote on this, we aren't voting on your development agreement.
That's correct. That'll be a separate item that will have to come back to council at some point in the future. And just like we did recently with the Paragon case, we will probably recommend if we're not far enough along on the development agreement that you not act on the zoning, in which case you probably won't want to act on the general plan amendments either.
Does the development agreement contain the issue of the road that we've all been getting email on?
Yes.
Then I'm uncomfortable with, if you want to consider it as a package, then I think we ought to have a discussion about the road situation along with it, because to take it separately doesn't make any sense to me.
If I could, Vice Mayor, we're talking about Hermosa Vista?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Hermosa Vista.
I really think between Bill Puffer and the developer and us, I think we're fine with that.
Well, we got one email
unless
from
I'm
somebody.
Unless I'm reading wrong.
Okay. We got one email from somebody who disagreed, and I didn't know if that represented a major position out there, if that was a minority position, or...
I'll be glad to review that email with you. I hadn't seen that.
Yeah.
Rex.
They've had 15, as of last night, neighborhood meetings. I was at a new one last night on the school in the south part. The northern one, I would say you have a very high percentage of agreement, including county residents, Madrid, Boulder Mountain, etc. The south one last night, I think there's one coming to you today on a compromise and where they put the school and the roads and whatever that made, they got 100% agreement on it last night in a very contentious meeting, which is absolutely amazing if the city goes along with it where it goes. So it'll be very interesting to see what our engineers say on that one. So yeah, this keeps going on, the never-ending meetings.
Okay, but that one, I wanted to make sure that we are hearing all of the voices and everybody has a chance to speak and knows what it is that we're voting on. Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
And I appreciate wanting to have a development agreement to see how all the pieces come together. What's the legal requirement on a minor plan amendment as far as the submittals and our approval process? What can we do and not do as far as requiring them to have a development agreement?
Mayor, the answer to that maybe a couple of ways. the main purpose from our perspective for the development agreement has to do with their proposal for a bridge over McKellips and then some guardhouses and so forth that go over some public rights of ways. We want to understand and have agreements on who's paying for those, who's maintaining those, allow them to have those over the public right of way, and that's a very integral part of their overall development. The general plan amendments are needed because there are a couple of pockets of their overall development where they're proposing some townhomes that get a little bit more dense than what the current plan allows for. And so they need those to be approved in order to get the zoning approved. There's not really a direct tie between the general plan amendments and the development agreement, but they are all kind of coming together as a package.
Okay. Does it extend to a major plan amendment too then for development agreements, or is that then the new criteria because you're looking at larger scales of property? Or is it not the scale, it's more the intricacies of what they're doing?
Yes, Mayor, it's really the latter, the intricacies of what they're doing in this case. Again, they have some things that both of us, they're wanting to do some things slightly different than the normal code and process, and plus they have some things that impact the city in the rights way. So we're both interested in development agreement in this particular
because
case.
We have some coming in on the GM property, at least the south half, and I'm curious on whether there's any parallel in the minors and the others.
Again, the development agreement is really related to the zoning. That's why I brought it up here, because all the cases are related.
Okay. And any particular reason why we have so many minor general plan amendments? Is there any time frame for submittal, or is it just coincidence?
No, it's just coincidence.
Okay. All right. Looks like we're up to page 3. Moving on to page 4. I think somebody was already at page 4. How about page 5? I'll try to keep up with you this morning. Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Item 8B doesn't have the recommendation from planning and zoning after it. Okay, thank you.
Okay, it's page 5, page 6. And then the contracts. Continuing, let's see, I was given a note here. I have conflicts on 10D and E. Because of potential asphalt work on those. All right. That would D and E. That's actually on page 7. So we're on page 6. Let's try page 7 also. Vice Mayor.
I actually have a question on 10E, but I think, is that the one you had a question on too? Okay. I have a question on 10E. That's on First Street. Keith, is the roadway getting improved in conjunction with the water line going in? We've been waiting for that street to get upgraded.
Vice Mayor, chilled water lines will go in first. Once they're complete, then the road gets improved.
Separate contract?
Yes.
Okay. Rex?
Two, one comment and a question. One, I want to commend you for the street is in terrible shape, but we've been known to do streets, and then we tear them up for water lines. So I know you've been waiting and waiting doing this, trying to save money and do them both at the same time. So I want to commend you for doing it that way, although a lot of people, it looks like a washboard going down part of it. Explain the chilled water and why it saves us money over standard air conditioning.
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, the savings and Council may recall we brought this when we did the overall central plant concept. The savings comes because you're operating less equipment, larger equipment. You can operate that more efficiently than small, separate little systems. So the idea is that by centralizing this, we can reduce our operating costs by serving facilities. And it works because of the closer proximity of the buildings we're trying to serve.
And you basically, like the old radiator system, we used to pump hot water through a place. You now pump cold water through, and you run a fan over it, and you get cooler air coming through it.
Yeah, essentially what we're doing is chilling the water at one location, pumping it out in a line that goes through a plate exchanger where the coolness from that water is transferred to the air, cools the air, then that cools the building. Or in a lot of cases, too, we circulate that water through the building and can actually chill through a fan coil unit, chill the air. And then we return the warmer water back to the plant where we then chill it down again.
It's much more efficient, the old air conditioning system with condensers and all the rest.
On larger buildings, the chilled water is more efficient than air system. You know, most smaller buildings have an air system, and so we use chilled water because it's more efficient, and we can use it on maybe a smaller building than you would normally with the central plant.
Okay, thank you.
Tom.
Keith, over what period of time, then, with those savings, would you anticipate recapturing this capital cost?
Sorry.
When we did the original analysis, Vice Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, when we did the original analysis, we had predicted, I think, the cost recovery was around 14 or 15 years, that we would recoup all the costs. That was the infrastructure cost for the chilled water plant and the lines.
Okay, so you haven't broken it down for this, and I'm assuming the capital cost is for the whole unit is substantially more than this $2.6 million.
Yeah. What we looked at is on the, for example, on the library in Centennial Hall, we looked at the cost of what it would cost to replace the chilled water equipment that needs to be replaced at those facilities. That cost really offset the cost of extending the line.
Okay.
So the perspective is then because the O&M costs will be less on operating the chilled water system, you should be saving money right away from it to get-go.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Summers, did you have a question?
Address my question.
Okay. And just for a point of comparison, Bank One Ballpark is used, they use this kind of a system at Bank One Ballpark because it saved them so much money to do it that way.
That's correct, Vice Mayor. This is fairly common in downtown areas. Again, it's economical when you have several facilities, especially large facilities, that you can share the load. And then if they have different peaking times, for example, as council knows, this was built originally for the art center where probably the peak demand is either on the weekends or in the evenings. And so we can off-peak some of that capacity to normal business hours by using it on facilities like our city buildings.
And take advantage of our sunk costs. Thank you. Appreciate it. Mayor, back to you.
I think you got one more.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. I'm a little slow this morning. We have in this CIP the improvement then of First Street after this project is done.
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Whalen, that's in transportation's operation budget to come in and do that. And I appreciate the credit, but it really goes to transportation. They planned this so that they left us off when we coordinated projects so that we wouldn't tear up the street.
Thank you. Anything? No? Okay.
That's page 7. Let's try page 8. Councilmember Griswold.
Probably the Terry Williams question, but on 11B, I know I'm getting a little picky-unish. On page 27 of the changes on the grading permits, I understand why you don't have a grading permit for a cemetery grave, but on number 1 it says excavation for construction of a building. These are exemptions or exceptions. Excavation for construction of a building or structure permitted under this chapter and Title 4, Chapter 1, Mason Municipal Code. What kind of building doesn't need a grading permit?
I would suggest that that's, Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, I would suggest that that would be a small, very small project in addition to a residence. Keep in mind that the admin code, which is our Title 4, Chapter 1, covers the entire gamut of permittable projects from the very smallest, a replacement of an electrical panel, to, you know, a major hospital and everything in between. So the language is written in such a way that would allow us to cover the smaller end without requiring it on the larger project.
So if you add a room on your house, you don't need a grading permit?
You don't need a grading permit for that.
Thank you.
It's merged. It's considered to be merged in with the building permit.
For enclosing a garage. Okay. Right. Thank you.
I'm impressed that you got to page, 26, 27, reading the code?
Yeah, four and five.
Good work. All right. That's page 8. Page 9. Page 10. In resolutions. Continuing on page 11. And 12. Page 13. Yeah. Scott.
Thank you, Mayor. On 12Q, is reading here, part of the discussion spells out a payback requirement if the project does not proceed. It's $100,000 we're receiving from the flood control district for the project in the river bottom. Is there anybody who can talk about this one? Nobody's jumping up and running. There we go.
Sure. It just says here, it spells out a payback requirement if the project doesn't proceed. Are you talking about the project as a whole? Are we talking about the engineering and design phase of the project?
This particular is for the engineering and design only.
Okay, so if the engineering and design phase doesn't proceed, then we'd have to pay the money back. But as long as that's done, we're all set. Okay, that's what I wanted to know on that one. Thank you.
Rex? On 12N, it looks like we're building this fence over and over again, but I'll declare another conflict of interest on a fence being built at Falcon Field that may touch a restaurant property they own on the field. So I will neither vote nor discuss this item.
Tom?
With great regret, I'll continue to declare a conflict on 12Q.
Okay, that's page 13, page 14. Scott.
Is that the reason why it's not on the consent 12Q? Okay.
All right. We're on page 14, page 15. Page 16, it's some zoning cases. Scott. Go ahead.
John, I could see you ready to jump, and you're going to address on 13I. We still have some concerns with the utility connects right away with the Ray Road connection. Has that been resolved? And then also there's still a question of 88th Street connection as I read it.
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, the applicants in this case have submitted an infrastructure plan of sorts that shows where those streets would be located, and then the utilities would follow those streets. We did run into a last-minute glitch at P&Z with regard to 88th, and one of the property owners in the area withdrew their support for that, but we still believe we can work around it because where that property is the street's at the normal alignment at the half section anyway through most of that property, so we don't see that as being a big concern.
What's their objection?
They want to continue to go straight south to Ray Road and not curve around the freeway, but the freeway in that location will be on an embankment, and there's no way to put the road under there in an economical fashion. It's going to need to continue along the east side of it down to Ray Road.
Well, the way it's proposed now, doesn't that bring it closer to the eastern end of the property for the person who's objecting?
Councilmember Summers, the person objecting is on the west side. It's the Kitchell property to the west.
And it brings 88th Street along their eastern border.
It starts off on their eastern border, but as it goes south and it's the freeway, then it goes further east towards Ellsworth away from their property.
Oh, okay. I see. And they're the only ones that are removing their consent from now.
That's right.
But the utility connections have been addressed, and the right-of-way for Ray Road has been addressed as well. Where are we on that for
Mayor,
these properties right, anyway?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, this particular zoning case does not touch Ray Road at all, so we haven't been able to address Ray Road with this case.
We need to continue the work on that one. From that stretch and just north of the Williams Gateway Airport, where are we now? We might be a little off topic. I hope we're not, but...
Yeah. Mayor, Councilmember Summers, I can tell you that we've had some preliminary discussions with Paul Gilbert on that. He's representing some of the homeowners, and I'm sure we'll have continued discussions on it. But right now, I don't think we have any agreement with reference to right-of-way, or I don't really know what their timeline is anyway for developing. Right now, we're only discussing it.
Okay. I may need to meet with you for a few minutes sometime next week and get up to speed of where we are on that alignment. That's it for that one. Thank you.
Okay. That's page 16. Page 17. Vice Mayor.
John, curiosity question on 13M. Did the residents' issues, which really have not much to do with the zoning case, but they brought them up at the zoning hearing regarding the storage of motorhomes, get resolved?
Vice Mayor Walters, I've not heard any more from them on that. That really is kind of their private property issue.
Yeah.
To resolve, we haven't heard any more.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. That's 17, Let's go on to 18. All right.
One quick issue. There was one citizen had, 13L, I'm sorry. 13L, there was access between this residential subdivision and the one just to the east. You had one individual noted there was going to be an access way. There was some concern that there would be parking over in that neighborhood coming across. And I noticed that that access has a keypad. So who has access to the code to the keypad? Only the folks in the new development or the folks in the old one as well?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, the applicant for this case has agreed to do it so that residents of both sides would have that code and could freely go back and forth.
All right. So, all right. Then that makes it a legitimate, in my mind, the reason I asked is that makes it a legitimate pathway for folks in the existing neighborhood to access the commercial site. If it was going to be restricted only to the folks living in the new area, I wouldn't see a reason for that, but I'm all right with it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. That's anything else on page 17? Right, page 18? Page 19? Mike?
On 15A, I don't have the backup on this, but 425 East Brown is south and east of Brown and Mesa Drive, and it says south and west. And my question is this an apartment conversion, or is this a tear down and a rebuild? Does anybody know?
Let me check real quick. I don't remember offhand. It probably is a conversion. Let me see if I've got that.
I don't remember this coming forward if it was a conversion. I know it's just a subdivision plat. You can just check on me and get that.
I believe it is a conversion, but I'll check for sure and let you
know. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, it's 19, page 20, additional subdivision plats. Okay. Yeah. Saved them all for me when I got back. Huh? Vice Mayor.
Just a comment on that, because that wasn't the only condominium conversion that was on there. If that is a condo conversion, the one that was in my district is a condo conversion. I would be weighing in on this if there were some way for me to weigh in on it, but legally there isn't. I hope that we will continue to address this at the legislature this year, because I think that there are some inherent difficulties in terms of policing and code compliance and all kinds of things that that the state legislature has completely ignored in this, and we're all going to be picking up the pieces and paying the consequences of this for years to come. And I noticed that there was an article in the paper this last week that Phoenix has much the same concerns we have. So I think that we ought to be able to get together with folks and address it. Thank you.
Why don't we kind of earmark that as a legislative push here with our legislators this year as we have discussions? Because I see the same thing as the fourplexes that we did back in the 80s. We're creating the same type of environment, or could possibly.
My question is, what amount of input do we have? I know you say, but at least some notice so that we could do some advocacy on these things as they start to roll forward. I mean, you handle them all administratively, right?
The Mayor, Councilmember Whalen, the preliminary plat that's required for that conversion goes to the Planning and Zoning Board, and then the final plat comes here to this board, but there's no notice requirements when we do platting, so it doesn't get much attention.
Yeah. Rex?
The upside, at least in my area, has been people putting millions of dollars into older apartments, bringing them up to standards, putting in new amenities, and then selling them. If they don't do the new amenities, they don't sell. The downside, I think you're worried about, is fourplexes and things where you just get another problem that we can't really, and you have four owners that you can't control. It's hard enough to control one owner. So I understand the downside, but I think the upside so far, at least in the areas I've seen, has been more positive than the downside.
Vice Mayor.
And the issue for me is that I don't see that kind of investment occurring in a number of these. There is no investment. We are not allowed to require the upgrades, and that's what Phoenix is complaining about, that you couldn't build this originally. You could not have come in and, under our city codes, have built these as condominium units. And so now we're allowing something to happen that then, in at least in many instances, what we're really doing is we're condoing rentals so that everybody can own a piece of a rental. And it becomes really, really difficult. I noticed that Phoenix's approach to it is, we're going to require you to do things, so sue us. they're going to take it to court and see and try and challenge the state law that way. At least that was the impression that I had.
Mike?
I've been getting questions on one in the 500 block of West Fairway, too, and another one, if you could. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's in your district. If you could check on that for me.
Any other questions on the agenda for Monday? Okay. Number two is to hear an update on the Falcon Field Airport Master Plan.
Mayor Hawker, council members, thank you for giving us the opportunity to come here this morning to give you an update on the master plan that we are proposing to complete on Falcon Field. This particular update, you will note, is addressed in agenda items 12O and 12P as far as requesting approval of two state grants for this project. The federal grant for this project was previously approved by this council back in September, and we were asked to make a brief presentation to you this morning just to give you a general overview of what we're looking to accomplish with this master plan. My name is Corrine Nystrom. I'm the airport director out at Falcon Field. It's my pleasure to present to you also this morning Jeff Tripp, who is the airport project supervisor, who will be working with me on this project. And it's also my pleasure to introduce Steve Wagner, who is with Kaufman Associates. He's a principal with Kaufman. Kaufman is a nationally known consulting firm that works with airports across the United States to perform planning project updates. And they were selected through a competitive proposal process to serve as the consultants for this particular master plan update. We have a brief PowerPoint presentation that we'd like to present to you this morning, and then we'd be happy to address any questions that you might have afterwards. Jeff?
Good morning, Mayor Hawker and members of the council. The current master plan that the airport is operating under was conducted back in 1992. Now, given the tremendous growth and change in both Mesa as well as the Phoenix area, there's time for the plan to be updated. What we'll be doing is conducting a comprehensive analysis of the airport and its facilities to provide direction to city staff to help plan for the future development of the airport and its facilities. The projected time frame for the completion of the project and the final presentation to council is anticipated to take between 12 and 18 months, starting from January 2007 when we kick off the project. As Corrine mentioned, we do have several funding sources for the project, a combination of federal, state, and city monies. As Corrine mentioned, we had the council approve back in September a $170,000 grant from the FAA. On council agenda items 12O and 12P, we have two state grants in the amount of approximately $63,000, and then the city matching funds of about $11,000 to conduct the update. The master plan update will provide a phased plan for the future development of the airport and its facilities, and it will help the staff assist with the orderly and timely development of those facilities based upon the demands. Throughout the master plan process, we will look at the inventory and analyze the airport and its operating environs. We'll be evaluating the area's aviation activity based at Falcon Field, as well as looking at some of the other activities such as Williams Gateway, Sky Harbor. Forecasting the aviation activity through the year 2026 at Falcon Field. And with those three items, will help us to determine the facility requirements to meet those demands. We'll also be researching the impacts associated with future development of the airport, identifying potential development alternatives, and ensure that those proposed developments are compatible with both the aviation needs of the airport as well as with the local environment. The study will break down into seven specific areas of concentration. First area is the inventory of the airport facilities. Second will be talking about the aviation demand forecast, the operations counts, the types of aircraft that will be there based at the airport, and the numbers. Looking at the capacity analysis and the facility requirements of the airport itself. Discussing airport development alternatives to give us some various alternatives for our development. Looking at environmental evaluations of the various items that the FAA is requesting us to look at. Item six, airport plans, will be the development and update of the airport layout plans, the airport land use maps, the public disclosure maps, and some other maps. And finally, we're looking at the capital improvement program, which will identify airport revenues as well as the various funding sources for these developments over the course of the master plan. Because the airport is a public facility, the public involvement will be a major portion of this project. As such, we have scheduled up to 6 coordination meetings, which will include presentations to the council as well as other citizen groups or other groups as required. 4 planning advisory committee meetings, and I'll touch upon the planning advisory committee's purpose in just a moment. 3 public information workshops for the general public. We'll also be trying to take advantage of technology and posting everything that we're doing on the website, either the airport website or the website hosted by Kaufman Associates, so that the public can have instant access to all the information. We'll also be working with the local media, the local Valley newspapers, as well as Mesa Channel 11 to get the information out to the public. And finally, we're using direct mailings to some of the local homeowners and homeowners associations in the vicinity of the airport. Representation on the Planning Advisory Committee, or PAC Committee, will include city staff from the airport, planning and engineering departments, airport tenants and users, local citizens and business representatives, FAA and state aeronautics, and possibly, if they request it, representatives from the military. The Planning Advisory Committee will review and comment on the work in progress, and basically they're going to provide a forum for discussion of the issues as the master plan process goes through, and we're hoping they'll be contributing ideas as well as potential solutions for the issues that will face the various constituent groups. Basically, they will be the conduit to provide input to and from the various constituent groups, whether it be airport users, citizens groups, and they can provide updates on the progress of the study as it's ongoing. And in summary, the goal of the master plan is to help plan for the growth and development of Falcon Field so that it can continue to remain the economic asset for the city that it is currently. And this will be accomplished through continued public-private partnership between the city, airport tenants and users, the various federal agencies and state agencies, as well as the airport neighbors and the community at large. And that will open up for any questions from the council.
Mayor.
Yes.
Mayor,
Could maybe you could describe why this is important as far as going forward and getting funding from the FAA, because I think that's important also to understand why we need to update this, not only because it's good planning, you know, idea, but also relates to how we interface with FAA to get additional funding in the future.
I'll be happy to address that. Mayor Hawker, council members. One of the reasons why the FAA and Arizona Division of Aeronautics requires that a master plan update be completed periodically is because it is used as a major planning tool in determining what capital improvement projects are necessary in order to keep the airport viable and growing. And obviously, since those two entities are directly involved in the funding for those improvements, it gives them and us as the city basically a roadmap to start planning for the future as far as what types and amounts of funding are going to be needed to be applied directly to Falcon Field in order to ensure that those capital improvement projects actually come to fruition.
Okay. What land area is under study? The approach and departure, I know once before we talked about extending the runway, that was an interesting neighborhood involvement was created from making that announcement. What are you planning on in this case? Is that still under consideration? And how far does it go outside of the boundaries of the airport itself?
Mayor Hawker, council members, we are going to be including those approach areas in the master plan study. Obviously, as far as the infrastructure improvements, we're looking at the actual boundaries of the airport itself, but it does extend beyond that, particularly with respect to the noise contours, and I may have Steve address that a little bit. There, you are correct that there were previous discussions in the past about runway extensions. There is no intent in the course of conducting this study to hold any discussions about extending the runway at this point, unless there is obvious community support for doing that. But right now, we have no plans to do that. Steve, would you like to?
Mayor Hawker, I think one of the things that we always have to look at are the current design standards that FAA imposes on airports, and those continue to change. And so one of the things we're mostly concerned about would be the approach areas, just meeting those standards, meeting obstruction clearance standards for aircraft that are operating in and out of the airport. So we apply those most current standards to the airport and look at that. But as Corinne mentioned, I mean, we're not anticipating any runway extension of that sort or anything, but primarily looking at the existing facility and how that meets those standards.
Does that apply to the traffic patterns? You're going to stay with the right-hand traffic pattern and stack them instead of going to the left?
Mayor Hawker, council members, the traffic patterns are basically established by the FAA, but those will be looked at again in terms of the noise contours so that for future planning purposes, we can at least give prospective developers and homeowners the opportunity to look at what impact the airport may have on their particular area of interest. Steve, do you have anything more to add to that?
Well, I think the process is very encompassing of users and surrounding community. And with the advisory committee representing all of those interests, I believe that it's a very it's an effort that's really intended to bring different interests together and be educational to everyone involved and look at issues, current issues on the airport. Although we really do anticipate most of the emphasis on this update to be landside facilities.
Right. And last question has to do with Boeing. Boeing has some routes where they fly and do testing. I assume that they're in contact with the control tower. It's not just a remote facility. So are they going to be or will be a part of this study also?
Mayor Hawker, one of the recommendations that we will make is that Boeing serve as a member on the public advisory committee, the planning advisory committee, because of their importance to that area.
Because we keep talking about Greenfield, and I know there was a hotel that wanted to build there at one time. So
that's right.
We have some that may not be direct traffic patterns, but it certainly is from aviation uses. So.
Yes, they're clearly a player in that area, and we need to include them in the conversations.
Okay, good. Other questions on it? Tom?
I could be wrong, but it seems to me like a year or so ago we had a presentation on a internal study that we had done or a master plan update. And how is that master plan update different than this master plan update, and why are we doing two?
Mayor Hawker, Council Member Rawls, you are correct, that was an internal project that we worked on because of the high demand that we were seeing for the opportunity in particular to develop more hangars at the airport. We felt as though because we knew that the funding for the master plan was a little ways out, we felt as though it was essential that we begin that planning process internally to at least get the ball rolling so that when we got this master plan going, we would have at least some idea as to what direction that we would like to head. Barring that being done, it would have been very difficult for us to lease out some of that vacant ground that is currently out there at Falcon Field. And because of that earlier study that was completed, and actually Kauffman was involved in that study, we've been successful in leasing out three pieces of property at this point because we were able to basically get a jump start on it. Now, to answer your question specifically, how will they be intertwined? Certainly the information that we glean from that study will be factored into the overall master plan study. The FAA is aware of that, ADOT is aware of that, and again, it's just basically we just got a jump start on what we're looking to probably put in the plan in the long run.
So is this master plan update going to take into consideration what sites we want to have for commercial development, which ones we don't want to lease? And so, I mean, I'm assuming there must be at least some cost savings associated with the fact that we went through a public process, we went through an internal process to come up with all the nice color shadings on the maps and all those good things.
Mayor Hocker, Councilmember Rawls, that is correct.
Can I understand where the sources of this $244,000 are from. Could I get a breakdown, I don't mean right now, but as to how the money's going to be spent? I mean, you're getting $244,000 to conduct a master plan update. Does the consultant get the entire $244,000? Does, you know, he get 60% of it? I mean, I'd like to see how the money is spent for something like this as opposed to just knowing where it's coming from. Because even around $11,000 of it is City of Mesa money, we still have a responsibility to know how the money is spent. So I'd like to have that provided.
Mayor Hocker, Councilmember Rawls, we can certainly provide that to you.
And on a more two-foot overview rather than the $30,000 that we always talk about, this is the first opportunity I've had that. Do we charge a fee for people who get on the waiting list for hangars?
Mayor Hocker, Councilmember Rawls, yes, we do.
And what is that fee?
That fee is the equivalent to 1 month's worth of rent.
Okay. And does that fee have any correlation to the cost that we incur by adding that person to the waiting list?
I'm not sure I understand
the
question.
Do we incur any kind of personnel, infrastructure, facilities, paper, pencils, computer time, cost that has any correlation at all with the amount of that deposit?
Mayor Hocker, Councilmember Rawls, yes, we do. The primary cost is an administrative cost of setting up the record for that particular individual. Also, once that person is included on the waiting list, they are included in any correspondence or mailings that we may send out to the existing tenants so that they are kept in the loop as far as what's going on with the airport. When they actually do secure a tie-down or a hangar, that money is then applied towards the first month of their rent.
The entire amount?
Yes.
Okay. So then we end up absorbing the administrative cost.
That's correct.
What if they don't ever get a hangar? And they finally say, okay, I don't want to be on the waiting list anymore. I found a spot in Chandler. Is the deposit refunded?
Mayor Hocker, Councilmember Rawls, at this point in time, the policy does not allow for that, that they are asked to forfeit that money.
I think that's at least that issue is something we ought to address as a council.
Okay. Other issues? Rex.
The state grants, is that aviation fuel sale money that comes off that, or is that a different pool of money coming from?
Mayor Hocker, Councilmember Griswold, that is correct. That comes from the funding that is collected through the aviation sales, fuel sales taxes throughout the state.
So pilots pay to improve the airports around the state, and they get the money back to have the airport safer, better, expanded, et cetera.
Yes.
Is the federal grant money anywhere tied into any aviation fuel, or is that just the general fund from?
Mayor Hocker, Councilmember Griswold, those funds also come from the Federal Aviation Trust Fund, which is an accumulation of various taxes that are imposed upon the various aviation users across the United States.
So basically, pilots fund the airport system in Arizona and around the.
That's correct, yes.
All right. Thank you. I was involved in the 92 one. It's an interesting process. And there they looked at, do you want to lengthen it, strengthen it, you know, anything else? And it came down to leave it where it is and make sure it's safe, that you run off the end of the taxiway, you don't suck mud into your engines or whatever it is. So, I mean, also with more and more traffic, people have asked about the fly-friendly zones and whatever. So those are going to be interesting ones to come out. It is changed airport since 1992, and this needs to be updated. So, particularly with the pilots paying for it, I think it's a good thing.
Okay, any other questions or comments on it? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The next item is hear an update on the city's financial forecast.
Morning, Mayor and Council. I'll kick this off and quickly turn it over to Chuck and Jamie. We're here with Council this morning to really start kicking off our discussion with you about the upcoming budget and doing that prior to our starting of our internal budget development process that will start here near the end of the year. This morning, we're here to outline for you where we are fiscally and what changes have occurred during the past several months and what we anticipate to occur in the upcoming year. As Chuck and Jamie will explain in greater detail, the news is really both good and bad. While the basic structure and the premise of our forecast remains intact, there have been some economic factors that have changed, which will require us to change our forecast, and I think that's part of our forecast process, to update it as we move forward. Some of those changes may or may not be significant, kind of depends on the perspective. Just would advise you that what we're going to put up on the screen may be slightly different from what you will see in your packet. Your packet is probably more detailed. Some of the information that was going to be, we couldn't put the whole packet up on the screen. It would lose it in what people could see at home. So it'll be some more general outlines that'll be on the screen. With that, I'll turn it over to Chuck and Jamie to kick it off.
Mayor and Council, hope you can hear me. I'm going to start, if you could go to your handout and turn to page 2. I'm going to give you some background information. We're going to kind of, Chuck and I are going to go back and forth and providing information to you. On page 2, you can see the general fund sales tax information. You can see the graph showing the trend of what our historical sales tax had been. That's the numbers in purple. For 06-07 budget and forecast, they're relatively close. We're forecasting a little bit of growth at this point over budget in sales tax receipts based on what we've received to date. We're looking at a growth of approximately 6.1% over the previous year for 06-07. And then if you see the table below that, this is what we're forecasting for growth in taxable sales, with 07-08 showing a growth of 5.2%. The actual numbers may vary a bit just because of the timing of the new sales tax rate going into effect. There was a bit of a lag, and so the numbers vary a little bit because of that. But overall, these are the growths we're looking for. Fairly moderate, not getting overly aggressive in the future of projected sales tax growth. Page 3 looks at another significant revenue source for the city, and that's state shared revenues. In the general fund, we have the auto and lieu license vehicle tax, a share of state sales tax, and state revenue sharing, which is state income tax. As you can see in the graph, we're forecasting projected growth, but we're showing impact points where we will see some reduction in the City of Mesa share. We saw one of these already in 06-07 with the mid-decade census. There are other communities growing at a faster rate than we are, and so obviously if they're growing at a faster rate, they get a bigger share of the pie. We're forecasting that the next decade census we'll again see that pattern. We'll see a reduction in our share, and you see the note in the graph up on the top right. And then from that point, it sets a new base, and we progress after that. Page 4 is just talking about some of that historical information on state shared revenues, looking at their average growth and the actual dollars that we're forecasting, looking historically, and then the growth factors. The one thing that we've also factored into this is the state has lowered the income tax rate phased it over 2 years to an eventual 10%, and then it's anticipated that will be a permanent reduction. So that's forecasted in here. We're assuming that the state will still continue to provide the 15% allocation that they give to political subdivisions. That percentage has varied historically, usually as economic conditions harden. They ask the states to take a lower share, but at this point, the indication is that they are going to stay with the 15%, so that's what we forecasted in. Page 5 is income or utilities, and Chuck's going to speak to those.
Let me give you a quick summary on each of the major enterprises. The first one is electric utilities on page 5 of your handout. You see a very large spike in 05-06. That is not a solution to our problems of profitability with the electric utility. We had 15 vacancies out of 42 budgeted positions. That's just a lack of oversight for projects. It is a one-time occurrence. It shouldn't be long-term. Historically, the net income is about $5.2 million. So you can see that was 9.4. That's quite large. It's not a healthy long-term effect to continue operation of the utility. We also have in the forecast, just a note on your bottom year 5, we've stayed with the standard utility planned rates of 07-08 with 5% and then 3% into the future. We can discuss, as the budget process continues, altering those issues. We've just maintained the constant revenue dollars throughout each of the utilities. Page 6 is your gas utility. It kind of seesaws, you can see, historically, based on gas consumption, most likely with the weather changes and patterns. Gains a little more growth into the future because of the growth in sales out in the Magma area, but stays fairly standard. Again, 5% planned and 3 into the future after 07-08. Now, we get to page 7.
Let's ask a few questions as we go.
Sure.
Tom?
Ahead of the electric utility difference. If those 15 vacancies, each one of those people were paid $100,000, that would be $1.5 million. That doesn't account for the $4.2 million difference.
No,
nowhere close.
No, where you start to drop off is you do a lot of capital projects out of revenues in electric. We don't bond a lot of their projects.
Right.
With the lack of personnel, you've got the lack of projects. So your non-capitalized commodities and other services go down, okay, and your capitalized costs go down.
Yeah, I read that in here, and then your presentation seemed to focus on just the people. And
I think it's causal that you had lack of personnel to do those oversight issues. That's why.
Then you don't without the people, you don't spend the capital because they actually do the projects.
That
themselves.
Is correct. We do most of the projects in-house.
That clarifies it. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Vice Mayor.
But did we retain the capital project money in the electric utility so we could do the projects when we hire the people to do them, or did we transfer it over to the general fund?
No, that was budgeted and stayed there.
Okay.
And we did not increase our transfer in relation to that.
Okay. I just want to make sure that we didn't take that, because
right,
if I were sitting there, if I'm an electric utility customer, and at some point I'm going to make my comments about the fact that not only do I think we need to not increase their rates, but I think we need to decrease their rates. But I'd be looking at that and saying, well, thanks a whole lot. We just subsidized the general fund even more.
Well, you'll see what we've done on in the later pages here of how we've shown what the enterprise fund does separately from what our past presentations and format might have been. So
okay,
it'll demonstrate.
And Mayor, Vice Mayor, let's just make it clear. The transfer to the general fund is not based on – it's a fixed amount that's determined with the budget. So it doesn't vary with the expenditures or revenues coming in from each of the utilities. It is an established budget amount at the beginning of the year and forecasted as a set amount going on to the future. So, I mean, unless we're adjusting because the utility, just because the utility does much better in 1 year, doesn't mean that the transfer goes up in relationship to it. It is considered a cost that is factored into the overall utility. So it's not not variable, but based upon the performance of the utility itself.
And I appreciate that, but let's make that really clear, because I don't think it's necessarily clear to somebody who's seeing a chart. So I appreciate your saying that.
Right, right.
Tom,
I guess the way I would ask Claudia's question, which I think is a really good one, is I'm assuming that at the beginning of 06-07, the beginning fund balance for the electric utility was higher than it was the year before, because the money had been budgeted for the capital and the people. We didn't spend it, so it's still sitting there ready to be spent next year or the year after.
The overall enterprise fund is fund balance is better, correct?
Yeah, I don't know that you break them out individually, but if you... Okay, that's the point. That's why the money doesn't get spent.
Rex?
Just a question on page two, interpreting the graph. Is that including, is that the only the 1% line on the black line, and the other above it is the new sales tax 0.3 that we...
0.2. Well, this would be the 0.2 that was going to general governmental services type work.
Okay.
The 0.3 for transportation is in a separate fund.
It's not, that's in the not general reflected fund, on so here, and quality of life is not reflected
correct.
On here.
Those are restricted.
It's only the
funds.
0.2
They're
that the
reflected.
Residents approved
right.
for exactly. fire, police, et cetera. The other one was on page 4. It said, forecast Mesa's share of allocation decline 8% of the next decade as the political subdivisions. You show a growing trend, though, on the... is that just because we have more and more residents, even though we're getting
right,
less money per resident?
Right. The revenue is statewide, so the state is growing in population. They're anticipating significant increases in income tax. So we will still see more gross revenue because of the growth in the state. But if we were able to maintain our share of the pie and not lose it, we would actually receive more money. So the growth that we get is somewhat offset by the fact that we get a smaller share of the pie because other cities in the Arizona are growing faster than we are.
So we're going to be receiving, it's a larger pie, a smaller share of the pie, so we get
right.
basically less per resident, although we're going to have more residents. We'll have a growing trend. It's hard to explain to people. You have more money, but you're actually getting less per resident.
On a gross basis, we will see more revenue, but our share is going down because we're not growing as fast as other communities in the state.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll entertain any questions you have on the gas utility. Anything on gas? Okay. Water and wastewater. From an enterprise standpoint, the most significant issue with this is increasing debt in both water and wastewater. Wastewater is demonstrated by the light blue area on this graph, and the red area out there beginning in 10-11 is it goes into a net loss situation in the wastewater program. Now, this isn't a crisis situation at this time. We'd like to look at options related to restructuring long-term existing debt and those kind of issues, but we do have some pressures coming with that utility in the outer years. Water also has increased debt, and we'll have a little bit of a depressed profitability out in the outer years. Solid waste. We do have a dip in net income for 06-07. That is not an operational issue. We have authorized new solid waste vehicles for collections. And we paid for those out of revenue, so you have a planned dip in net income. And into the future, we'll be back to normal operations. And the reason for the additional vehicles is try to get them back on their 7-year cycle on replacement of their vehicles. That's what they've determined to be the economical life on most of their collection vehicles. So this is a planned increase in vehicle purchases to get them back on that cycle.
Claudia.
I've been getting an increase in the number of questions regarding solid waste and how we're doing on our recycling and profitability and all of that stuff. And it occurred to me as I was getting a lot more questions as I'm in neighborhoods than I have in the last couple of years. It's been a long time since we've had an update on this. So I hope we can have a separate look at what we're doing, you know, the green barrels, the blue barrels, the recovery from the blue barrels, all of those kinds of things.
Good study session item. Okay, solid waste, next.
And then we have building permit revenues. This is another major component of our revenue sources. We're forecasting a fairly steady growth over the next several years of about 3%, driven not primarily by volume, but by the valuation of the properties. kind of moving from the residential mix to the commercial mix. It maintains our growth in revenues in those areas based on valuation. And Jamie's going to talk about court fines.
Okay, overall, you can see the trend. It is we've had a slight dip. Some of these are occurring beyond our control by state mandates in shares of revenue that they want to retain or take. You can see the trend is upward. We're estimating a 4% growth in revenues on average in court fines. Part of this will be because of caseloads. We're expecting an increase in caseload anywhere from 1 to 2.5%. And then some adjustments in the fees or potentially implementation of more user fees or something, or not user fees, but administrative fees. So this is what we've used in the forecast for court fines.
Does this match up with the numbers that we used when we were talking about the court building?
I did on the court, on the caseload. I took that information on the cases to factor into this. And then so the other adjustments beyond that would be adjustments in fines or implementation of, as you recall, we kind of implemented some new administrative fees, looking to make some adjustments there in that format.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
This includes the new court capital fee?
Pardon?
This includes the new court capital fee in it? Because it doesn't...
No, because that's the restricted fund. That's
okay.
Not in the general.
All right, thank you.
That... But we've used those trends, those growth trends.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Why don't I have you turn to page 12? We got a little out of sequence here, so I'm just going to keep us in sequence. Page 12 is a synopsis of our homeowners survey, and the actual survey document is in the back. It's attachment 3 if you want to see the detail. Basically, with the information we have to date from the other communities on property tax rates, sales tax rates, and then residential charges for wastewater, water and solid waste. City of Mesa, for an average residential property, is the cheapest out of this grouping. You can see it. They go in order. Gilbert would be the next most expensive on down to Phoenix.
Okay, Mike?
How do you forecast the sales tax rate and compare it to other cities?
Well, we know the sales tax rate. Housing and Urban Development gives us estimates on income tax, income per family, and then there were some studies on what was an average sales tax usage on a home, so we've used that as a base to calculate the amount of sales tax that be generated by taxable sales on an average home based on some historical study.
On just home use?
Residential. Right. This is just a residential analysis of an average residential property.
Even though other cities have larger contracting tax rates, larger telecommunication tax rates?
Well, how that occurs is what you see is a weighted average percentage. So if you went to the model cities code and looked for their sales tax rate, it wouldn't match exactly what's going on here. We weight against what the sales are in Mesa, against those variances in tax rates against different categories, and come up with the percentage that would be charged.
Thanks.
Okay. Let's go back to page 11. This is the overall budget for 0607. You've seen this document as we were adopting the budget towards the end of June. This is the same document. The first line is general governmental operations and maintenance for $294.5 million. This, as we get further into the document, will go into that more in more detail. That is where we have most of our flexibility as we dealt with this last fiscal year budget. This is where we spent most of our time. Below that are the funds that are either restricted in nature or grants, for example, contingency. Our enterprise fund is in the center at about $202 million. If you recall, we had to make some adjustments in that budget to be able to fund the state-required accounting changes for about $31 million, so the entire budget is $973.3 million that was adopted for this year. If you could turn to page 13, what you see here is a comparison of those general governmental operations, the $294 million in 06-07, compared to the previous year of $279 million. Our budget obviously went up, but part of that is in relationship to increase in the sales tax revenue that the voters approved. And to be honest, most of the change occurred in either parks, recreation, where we had reductions in those areas, and police and fire were kept relatively intact. I'll go through a document here in a bit to detail that out a little more. Just keep in mind on the revenue side of the outside of this chart, this table, is that it doesn't reflect all the revenues, the sales tax, the enterprise, and the state shared. This is what we would allocate to those operational costs towards this $294 million. This does not include contingency, capital, or debt. Those were on the previous documents, so those share of revenues that would go to help pay for that in sales tax, enterprise, and state shared are identified outside with that. So overall, if you look, you don't see a lot of significant changes in between the one chart and the other. Obviously, public safety was tried to kept whole. That was not the emphasis of the council in developing the 06-07 budget. We saw more adjustments in parks, cultures, and other programs. Any questions on this page?
Hey, why don't you go to 14 in that pilot?
Right.
Or and 15, actually.
Yeah. 14 is looking at the revenue side of what changed. You can see, obviously, sales tax went up with the change in the rate. Very little change in the transfer from 05-06 to 06-07 from utilities into the general fund. State shared revenues were up. This is because the income tax revenue at the state had increased significantly from 05-06 to 06-07. And other general revenues, that reduction there, a lot of that is land sales that occurred in 05-06 that would not be duplicated in 06-07. That's over $5 million of that $7.7 million reduction. Part of that reduction is reduction in charges for services because of the reductions in programs and park and rec, museums and such. And there was some drops in fines. If you go to the next page, 15, you can see on the appropriation side what was the difference. Obviously, public safety went up significantly between the two fiscal years. You can see the reductions that were identified in parks, library, and culture. Community programs were kept relatively intact. All other programs, a lot of this would be the new leases that we, as we created those enhancements for infrastructure, part of that is identified here in trying to do PC leases, new financial system, CIS upgrade on that system. So some of those increases are tied to those enhancements we tried to build into the budget.
Jamie, quickly, just on the sales tax, how much of that in the amount for the sales tax is associated with the new rate, how much is that associated with the new rate?
Of the $18 million? Well, it, yeah, actually, because we're pulling part of that out to go with, part of that increase would be going with it. I mean, the bulk of this.
What I was trying to get to is the difference between the budgets of 05-06 and 06-07 for the council is the 14.8. Of the $14.8 million, $12.8 million went to public safety, which I think was reflective of the council's priorities at the time. What I was trying to demonstrate is that as a result of the increase, that increase in the sales tax, the majority of that would have gone into the public safety component
right.
of it. And this is just trying to emphasize that the priority of the council and that shift where you saw the increase, the significant increase from those 2 years was into the public safety programs.
I've got some questions. Scott, Claudia, then Rex.
Thank you. With the sales tax increase, very significant of that, a good portion of that is from the increase in sales tax rate to 1.75. How much of that increase was specifically geared toward transportation?
That's in a separate fund.
As is the public safety portion of that?
No, the public safety is in the general fund. You see that reflected here.
Okay.
The transportation 3/10 is in a separate fund for transportation. That would be on top of this amount, and then the quality of life, which is existing, that's in a separate fund.
Okay. So in the inner circle then, which I assume transportation, all other programs, I don't see transportation in there. Are those expenses also out of this equation as well?
Right.
That's a separate thing altogether.
We do some overhead, but frankly, the between HERT and the sales tax and the new county sales tax for projects, that is going to be doing our transportation.
All right. So everything in here is just general fund?
Yes.
That's what I need to know. Thanks.
This might be a good time to remind everybody what is in the forecast. This is our unrestricted portions. So it's the general fund and the enterprise fund primarily. Restricted funds, trust, and the bond projects all maintain or are maintained through a transfer, which we'll discuss a little later. So none of those items are included in our overall forecast. We're dealing with our unrestricted discretionary type of spending where you have choice over those funds.
See, this is where we tend to lose people. I mean, I got a little sidetracked as well. We have different pots of money used for different things, and folks don't understand this. This pot of money is strictly general fund money, which is police and fire, parks, recreation. Then we have another set of monies, like from the sales tax increase, that are for streets.
Street maintenance.
And if you go back to page 11, you can kind of see that distinction. The $294 million that table, the graph is talking about, is on the top line. But you can see those other pots of money are really identified below in these various other funds to make up the whole $973 million. So when people hear the budget for the city, they say, you've got scads of money, but they don't realize that a lot of that is restricted or committed by state law or by operations of the council, to where we've only got really for discretionary purposes that 294, and that's kind of why we concentrate on that figure.
So I can't, if I need more firefighters this year but not as many roads, I can't transfer out of the special funds.
You could not use HERF money, for example, to pay for firefighters because state law would prohibit them.
Or regional funds from MAG.
Right.
Or our 3/10 sales tax.
Yeah, this is where we get confusing. Mm-hmm. I want to get that out. Thank you.
Rex?
Just piggyback while you have the slide up on the charts.
The graphs.
I'm getting to be a fan of graphs again. If you look at the new one, it's interesting that all our sales tax and all our transfers and utilities does not pay for our police and courts alone. If you took everything we have, that barely pays for police and part of courts. The other one is, if you go back to page 11, the enterprise fund, you know, people say what a huge, you know, budget you have. The enterprise fund, yeah, we have about $220 million in we sell water, wastewater, et cetera. It costs us almost that much money to produce it. We take $77 million out of it after you spend $220 million generating it. So it's, you know, it's, you don't see the net coming out of it. You see the huge gross dollars, and every year when more residents move in, you're going to sell more water. So your budget's going to go up, and people say, why is your budget going up if you're cutting? Because we're selling more water. We don't get a profit off all that. In fact, wastewater, it looks like we're going to start losing money by everybody that flushes their toilet in very shortly. But it's hard to explain to people, again, that this huge number doesn't mean profit. It means expense. So.
And that's why we try to concentrate more on the, in this case, the 294 million.
Yeah, that's what we run the entire government off of. The rest of it is restricted, as you said.
Right.
Thank you.
Any questions on page 50?
Got a couple more. Claudia, and then Kyle.
Thanks. On the state shared revenues that we have, it looks by your chart that if we took all of our police and all of our fire and we matched it up against state shared revenues, our state shared revenues do not cover all of our public safety needs. Is that correct?
Okay. Yes.
If you look at the chart that you have on page 15, the only concern I had when I looked at this chart is that I thought, if somebody's just looking at that, it looks like, are you telling me that we increased the percentage of public safety programs by 86.7%?
No.
And what you're talking about is the change
right.
in that what? Budget. What we got from the extra sales tax that people voted for, how that got allocated, in essence. That's not quite correct, but...
It's the priority of the budget,
right.
where the dollars that were new dollars, you want to call them new dollars, from one year to the next, where they were directed. And so that really the purpose of this chart was to show priority of emphasis of what the commitment was.
Which, and I really appreciate that. The other piece that I think would be good as we do budgets and look at budgets in the future, I like your city-to-city comparison, what it costs, but I think a city-to-city comparison in terms of expenditures, if you could bring the budget of Scottsdale, which is about half our size, the budget of Chandler, which is about half our size, and we look at those, and they aren't operating all the utilities that we're operating, so they don't have all of those costs, and you look at ours, it gives people some perspective because they don't know what that number, what does that number mean of $973 million? Well, when you look at Scottsdale, who has over $1 billion with half of the people, and they don't have the utilities that we're operating, I think it gives people a point of comparison that might be helpful. Thank you, Mayor.
Kyle.
Well, quite frankly, most everything I was going to say has just been covered in the last few comments. But it's important that we let the public understand exactly what it is we're talking about, the operation and maintenance. We're not talking about all the capital projects and everything else tied to it, which adds up considerably. One comment when we're looking at that pie chart again, the transfer, the enterprise transfer, the $56.2 million. Mm-hmm. Now, is that the entire transfer for this budget? This is just this portion of it?
That would be just this portion. There is another part of that transfer portion that would go to help pay for the general fund contingency, the capital, and the debt service. So there is also that, plus the general fund transfers money out to help our mass transit for about $5 million a year, a share for housing, and those are the big ones. So this is really more of a net figure of what after they receive from the utility and they transfer out, then we're really looking at a net approach here.
Yep. And in actuality, because we're the concern of understanding a pot here, a pot here, a pot here, a pot here, what do we really have? But when it's coming to our basic operation and maintenance of the city, we're really transferring $56 million for that operation portion.
Right.
And
right.
Because our bond debt and our utilities have been, the payments have been coming due, we're having to keep more in utilities to pay that, so we're not going to be transferring as much as those payments come online.
The transfer amounts, and you'll see in the forecast, are going to be declining in the future because their debt service expenditures are going up exactly like you're saying. Plus, we'll be issuing new bonds in the future to maintain the infrastructure, and so we'll have new debt that we will have to cover within the utility fund as well.
Okay, and I appreciated that last question by Vice Mayor Walters about getting the full budget of other cities, simply because people don't understand the comparison when they say, oh, our budget went up by so much this year, but yet another city that's smaller than us went up by a higher amount, another city that's comparable percentage-wise of their entire budget went up considerably higher than us. And so we need that comparison, too, because when you have this comparison chart in the back, even though we're high on our utilities, we are not the highest in any category. There is always somebody, typically Glendale or Phoenix, and sometimes Scottsdale, who are higher than us. So in every single category, when we're talking about sales tax, solid waste, water, wastewater, all of that, there is a community in the valley that's higher than us. So people got to get this notion out of the head that we are at the top of everything. Because because we're not, because when you add it all up, we are dead last. And we can harp on that all we want until people finally understand that's what it really is.
Okay, let's proceed.
Well, let's go to page 16, and Chuck's going to carry this.
Okay, we've included these graphs to pie charts to kind of give a flavor of the difference in operating natures of our general fund versus the enterprise fund, since we're presenting them separately. As you can see, in the general fund, we pay or spend about 72% on personnel, commodities down to 7%, and other services, which are contracts, primarily at 21%. If you look at the enterprise fund, you can see that mix change significantly. You've got about 24% in personnel, and commodities 35%, which are significant when you're operating utilities, and other services 37%. So just to give you a flavor of what the operating nature of the two funds are. We also included a breakdown in, by departmental FTEs, by public safety, which is in the yellow on the chart. And you have a table at the bottom of your page that gives you counts on page 17. The blue is your general governmental services, which had an actual net loss of about 87 positions into the 06-07 budget. You have your enterprise services there in the gray, and then in purple at the top, which is HERF-related streets and transportation-related positions by department. To give you some, we've been reading a lot about vacancies and retention rates. As you can see, our vacancy history over the last 13 months here, you can see we peaked at about 410 vacant positions around the election time. And since we had adopted the budget, we have started hiring and filling authorized positions. And I believe there is, in the September to October reduction, there was a hiring of a police recruit class. So that had a significant impact on that set of data. And they continue to fill positions as they can.
Kyle?
I just want to point out one more thing on that last slide when you talked about our full-time equivalents. It's important to note that even though the budget amount goes up, the operating expenses go up. If you look at our staff, we are actually have smaller, less full-time equivalents than we had 4 years ago. So it's not a matter of government growing. It's not a matter of ballooning any departments. It's a matter of the cost of doing business has increased. And so, I want, again, it's just something to point out. That it's not a matter of government growing. Those dollars are related to something totally different.
Correct. And turn it over to Jamie to discuss some of the debt service.
In the forecast, we built the forecast with the assumption that existing debt, general obligation debt that the general fund would pay would still be the obligation of the general fund. Any new general obligation debt that would go to the voters would go to a secondary property tax for payment. So what you see on this graph right now is the existing debt that the general fund is going to try to cover out through the forecast period 24-25. The pink line was the existing debt that we had identified last year when we were doing the forecast. One of the changes that we've made, if you look in fiscal year 17-18, this is not eligible for a refunding at this point, but what we're planning is that at that point in time we'll do a current refunding and take a lot of that spike, about $20 million of that spike, out and extend that out over a longer period of time, just so that we don't have to have a big influx of money at that point to make a significant payment and then see the reduction down for later years. So we will try to make an effort there to get that a little more smoothed out on the existing debt. Obviously, new debt will get layered in by approval by the voters, but again, a secondary property tax is planned to pay for those. Any questions on this? Yes.
curiosity, what is our total GO bond debt right now?
Our existing debt at this point is about $305 million. Now, that, what I'm factoring in there is we do have some authorized debt that has not been sold yet, and I'm factoring that in into these numbers, and that's somewhere around $50 million. So when I say $305 million, I'm anticipating we'll sell another $50 million that will fall under this existing debt, and they're factored into these numbers.
Otherwise, debt that you're currently making payment on is $360 or so. You said we have $40 million left?
Somewhere around, I'm going to say around $50 million that we may sell. So
$250 million that are currently is what the debt service schedule is paying the payment for. The other $50 million has not been sold. It's been authorized but not sold. So when you look at the schedule, James, is what I'm trying to get to.
Right.
This schedule is the payment for that $250 million.
Right. Well, it'll be $305 million when you factor in the other
you
sale item.
$305 in here.
Right.
Not that, the 250 that we've actually sold.
Right. I'm still factoring in that there's some existing right. that we will sell over
That's
the next
part of where
years.
I was going. So this factors in all of the GO debt we have now plus what we'll sell.
What we'll plan to sell. Well, there is some that right. we won't. But.
And the question to the council will be, do you want to move forward with the sale of those bonds that have been authorized as they are planned without a secondary property tax, or do you not sell those bonds and then go back out for another authorization under a secondary property tax authorization? Therefore, then those bonds would not be, there would be some relief within
right.
the schedule, and then a secondary property tax would pay for those, assuming they were approved again under that other scenario.
And that's a good question. The last one, if I may, Mayor, is we're looking at selling the water farm over time. How much are we? Can somebody remind me
well,
how much we were?
That's in here. We'll show that
okay.
in a second.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Go ahead.
Okay. So what I'm saying, these bonds are authorized, like a pre-approved on a mortgage, but we haven't actually sold them or
right.
bought them. It's like then you
right.
actually
the
go and buy the house.
Approved them. We have not sold them.
But we've said basically that all GO bonds that get the voter approved now on, they decide. If you don't want a fire station, it's $2.5 million. It's going to cost you 7 cents per thousand for 10 years, and you know what's going to cost you. You know what you're going to get for it on a GO bond. A general obligation bond, you don't have any revenue source behind it. It's not like utilities. A park doesn't make any money. A police station doesn't make any money, et cetera. So people know what they are. So we could technically take that $50 million that voters gave us permission for, not issue it, and then go back to anything new that we issue, the voters decide on. If you don't want a fire station, you want longer response times on when someone shows up, that's fine. You know it's going to go from 4-minute response time to 6-minute response time, or you know what you get for it. So that's, and the voters get to decide whether they want to pay this debt or not. So, yeah, that sounds like a reasonable plan to get us through the next years of growth.
Okay. Now we'll start moving into the forecast models. I want to remind the council, Mayor and Council, the major components that we adopted with the past budget. We had $10 million of annual Pinal County land sales to retire debt, and that was $110 million over 11 years. We had the utility rate adjustments, which we remained constant at, 5% for 07-08 and 3% thereafter. We funded capital replacements, facility maintenance enhancements, allocation for annual service expansions of about $650,000, and the increased CIP allocations begin in 2008-2009, annual salary range adjustments of 2.25%, annual growth in the medical benefit costs of 9%, and future GO bond authorizations, debt authorizations to be offset with secondary property tax. And then we also set up a goal of 8-10% on our unrestricted fund balances. We had the limited growth in solid waste and the enterprise fund to just pick up the trash. We had elections and census items incurred. Now, for our update, and don't have this on the TV, but it is page 21 in your handout. These are the major factors that have influenced us on this update to the model that we had before. Primarily, you're going to see in 07-08 a personal services jump in percentage change of 8.93%. That includes a pressure of a benchmark study that we've received the results of. Other major items in health and life insurance, we're having a 10.7% factor rather than the 9, and that's based on our consultants' best estimate of what our future actuarial needs will be. Stability pay, since that's always an issue, as you can see, is declining and accelerates in its decline due to turnover in staff. We have started using the municipal cost index this time around rather than the Western Urban CPI. This is probably more reflective of what pressures there are on a municipal government rather than a family with their pressures. So we've started adopting this index to try to keep from getting behind the inflation curve so significantly. Jamie has also summarized the local sales tax. These are the percentage changes that go into the forecast model, the Yaddo-Loo sales, state sales tax, the state revenue sharing, and HERF. As you can see in 9-10, state revenue sharing, we lose an 8% share of that overall on our local collections. And then in 11-12, you see the census percentage shares relative to our share. The utility rate changes are below at 5 and 3 into the future. On page 22, this is the graphical representation of what that updated forecast would be. And as you can see with the red, we start below the ending fund balance targets in 10-11 and continue all the way out through the long-range forecast. We hit a low in 17-18 on the long range of negative 12.7%. Obviously, not a sustainable situation. We do maintain, if you look real quickly, just for the questions about enterprise fund on the next page, page 23, we maintain them with their 10% fund balances, with the exception of 1 year, which goes to 7.6% in 13-14. And that was just necessary with the pressures that were occurring in the general fund.
Claudia.
Thank you, Mayor. You know, in past years, I think that the viewing public who watches this all the time, all three people who watch every meeting and never miss, probably haven't known that we have done this every year at our council retreat. So for you to do this today as opposed to at our retreat tomorrow is probably a really good thing because everybody's getting to watch it. This issue of, I'm on page 21, of the hospital life insurance, and I think it's really the hospital dental, it's medical and dental.
It's
the life insurance is not what's driving this.
No, it isn't.
At all. This is a medical dental thing. I'm guessing that with that multiplier effect, and I haven't had time to sit down with the numbers and look at it, but I'm guessing that the cumulative change from 07-08 to 12-13 is probably somewhere between $18 and $25 million cumulatively over that period of time with the multiplier effect of 10.7 per year.
I'm going to, without having the numbers in front of me, that's going to be a pretty close guess.
It simply isn't sustainable. This is not sustainable, and this is not a Mesa issue. I've had people who have said, well, you know, if you've looked at, you ought to look at what the county's doing, you ought to look at what the state is doing. Mesa actually manages this very, very well. We really work hard at managing our costs, and we do a really good job, I think. We are self-insured. We've looked at what would happen if we went into a larger pool and all those kinds of issues. But this is a huge impact to our budget. And it isn't just an impact here. It's also an impact because of the issues involved with reporting the retirement benefits and all of those things. And so that's coming into play in a big way in our budget. Jamie, you wanted to say something.
Looking at 12-13, and our estimated costs are going to be somewhere around $44 million in 12-13 for health insurance costs to the city.
And today they are?
They're in the range of 13 to 14 million right now for 0607.
Like I said, this isn't.
I'm sorry, I read the wrong number. About 22.
Okay, I was going to say. You just took it from cumulative 30, to. Yeah, no. Okay.
24 million now, 40. What did I say? 44 million out there.
Okay, so even without accumulating it, just the change from this year into that year, I was trying to do. So accumulated, you're going to be up around 100?
No. It's $20 million difference from where it is today.
But 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 budget years here. Right. So your accumulated amounts are, you know, what, 70, somewhere around there? Something. We can do the math. We can figure it out. But I just don't think it's sustainable. I think we're going to have to look at something as a nation. I mean, this is not a Mesa issue. We're going to have to do something because this is a big cost driver in our budget, and I'm always concerned when we just list it as a percentage that people don't really understand what it means in terms of dollars. So just want to point that out. I know everybody's sick of my pointing it out. Mm-hmm.
And probably the thing that we need to get to next is on page 24 and 25 of your handout is what we have typically produced on the Excel table format of what generates the numbers that appear on that graph. Probably a good change to talk about would be, in the past we've talked operations and maintenance, CLS, being current levels of service. Probably we ought to talk in terms of current levels of staffing, because to probably a more fair descriptive item, if we're going to maintain the same level of staffing, we may suffer service deterioration. So probably should go to the terminology of current level of staffing, because that's what this represents. So some of the other items on format change, we split. It's not on there.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. We split the enterprise fund from the general fund. So page 24 represents the general fund. Page 25 is the enterprise fund. The other major change to the forecast format is at the bottom of after net results, you have the summary of net transfers in the general fund. That breaks down all the transfer activity from the enterprise fund and out to other funds and their sources, or their end game.
So overall, this is taking last year's major assumptions in the general fund, the enhancements, the CIP allocation, the growth, and overlaying what we now are looking at with benchmarks, capital improvement programs, inflationary adjustments. And basically this is telling you from the graph that we can't sustain this. We could not do last year's enhancements plus deal with these changes in the forecast. We can't financially make it.
Then we go to an adjusted forecast. And we've got that on page 26. The bullet points of what those overall changes are. Overall salaries are estimated to be about 7% below the market average, and we have factored in a 3% COLA to keep up with the cost of living. And part of the reasoning behind that is these benchmarks, if we have to incur a benchmark adjustment into the forecast several times into our future, it's significant shock, as you can see, to the overall model. If we assume a more close to inflationary factor on the salaries, hopefully those benchmarks in the future will keep pace and we won't see these percentage shocks that are current coming into the system. So that's the thought process behind that.
And quickly, Chuck, let me just add, that 7% below the market as of September, October of this year. We know that other cities will be making adjustments in July. That's where we are just today. And we don't plan on making any adjustments for at least for the next several months. So that just gives you a sense of where we stand at this moment in time right now. Not projecting anything forward. This is current information today.
And let me clarify again, though, that this forecast is based on current level of staffing, meaning not adding any more staff.
The only adjustments in staffing are occurring in CIP where there's an O&M, but frankly, most of that's in utilities.
But for general operations, we're the not only, talking about any increase.
No police officers, no firefighters.
Well, no clerical staff. But what we're after, what I'm pointing out is, from the previous slide, our staffing level is less than it was in 2002, yet our community's grown by 35, 40,000 people. And we're looking at a forecast saying we're looking many years out in the future without increasing staffing levels, that yet we're going to have a lot more people coming in, and we're still not going to make it.
Correct.
That's what the forecast is telling us.
On the updated forecast.
Okay.
Point B, market impacts. What a difference a few months make in real estate. We had originally put in $110 million in Pinal County water farm sales. Recognizing the slowdown in market, that they may not develop as quickly as possible, we have recognized $16 million in the first 5 years to relieve some of the pressure on those land sales. Hopefully that will get us back into the next cycle. No allocations for newer expanded operating services, so that $650,000 enhancement is out. No new capital improvement programs allocated above the current CIP plan. So anything that's in the CIP plan is included in our forecast. Housing program subsidies are discontinued by 10-11. The general fund balance goal of 10% is not sustained from 9-10 through 16-17. It does maintain that to that point and then after that point. The enterprise fund goal of 10% is sustained throughout the long-range forecast. And you can see this graphically on page 27, and there is a small dip in red, as you can see, in that period 10-11 to 15-16. And then you see a maroon color coming in out at 17-18, and that represents those enhanced services. Otherwise, you can see everything stays as it was in the original model that we had adopted with these significant changes. Page 28 is the enterprise fund, and as you can see in the outer years, it gains fairly significantly on retention of their fund balance. That is graphically presented or by table on pages 29 and 30, and what we've done in your handouts are the bright red areas are really the significant changes that we've had from the previous model that show the change in the model overall.
And what I should also add here is that what this is really showing, and I'll go back to Councilmember Rawls' discussion earlier about, you know, we have a box of services and our ability to do that is police officers and firefighters and everything else, and it's a certain size and we're serving a certain area. What this forecast now says is that box of services is not growing. It was going to grow by just a little bit every year. We were going to add $650,000 worth of new services, things of that nature, some capital improvement pay-as-you-go. But what that does is, again, this does not allow that box to grow. Now, the area we're serving continues to grow, as Councilmember Jones said. Then the number, the population continues to expand. What that will lead to is degradation in service, longer call waits, longer response times, things of that nature. I just want you to be aware of that. What it will require for us to do in the future, and it kind of goes back to your discussion last Thursday, is for us to add additional staff, we're going to have to, again, reorganize priorities, whether internally or reorganize operations in order to afford those staff or to do a cost recovery activity where we enhance staff like we did on the fire inspection as in order to pay for those type of activities through a fee for service or some other form of arrangement. But what we're showing here really is we can't grow that box without utilizing those two types of service changes.
And one other significant item I'd point out on 28, not to change the subject again, but we've talked about the percentages of transfer from the enterprise fund to the general fund. The percentage is currently about 27-28%. Over the forecast, we get into an eventual range of about 15% into the outer years, and that can be maintained in those outer years. So we have attempted to attain those goals as set forth on making it as independent as possible as quickly as possible. without just putting us into financial shock. And then we've also included the full forecast as attachment ones, or one and two, for each year through 24-25.
Okay.
If there's no questions, I'll turn it over to Brian.
So I'm clear, you've taken the same number of employees you have right now. Like we have 830, I think, somewhere in that number in the police department, and they take care of 450,000 people, 830 people, policemen or police officers. We grow to 550,000, 830 officers take care of 550,000. Same thing with firemen. The only way it happens when you call when having a heart attack is it's now a 8-minute response time rather than a 4-minute response time.
Your response times are going to increase.
So we have no mechanism with our current financial, the way we fund our city, to take care of new people coming in do not pay the same as the old people that were here.
Your options really are to cut existing services to free up resources to reallocate, do a pay-as-you-go, as Brian was saying, or bring in a new revenue source, or adjust a revenue source to create more revenues. That's really your three options.
Yeah. Thank you.
What the election really allowed us to do was to it funded what we're currently doing. It didn't at the current population level, but it doesn't allow us to grow those service, grow in response to service demands, and that's going to be our continued challenge. That presents significant challenges to us, there's no doubt.
Okay. Dial.
Along those same lines, and I've brought this up many times before, is our infrastructure. The old infrastructure, we have some projects for starting to address that, but until we get the full evaluation and know the extent of it, this model still doesn't cover the extensive work that we're going to have to do. It has some built-in for some of the bonding we're working on.
We basically allocated probably somewhere on the range of $60 million a year in new bond sales and utilities. If that's adequate or not, I couldn't tell you at this point. It's just what we've allocated.
That's bonding, but that's going to be new infrastructure, too. That's not just
correct.
The old. And I'm more concerned about the old.
You know, right.
We can keep building the new stuff to keep going, but the old is going to kick us in the pants sooner or later. And that's not fully built in because we don't know what it is yet.
Right. Once we get that information, we could factor it into this forecast to tell you can it be sustained or do we have to make adjustments?
See how much further behind we're going to be.
Correct.
Okay.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. What's the impact of our not issuing the authorized general obligation bonds? If we don't issue that remaining 50 whatever million, what's the impact in terms of reducing the amount of debt service?
I have to run that honestly over 20 years. It may not be that significant.
Okay, well,
maybe $1 million, $1.5 million a year.
Could you let us know?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Just wanted to throw out one thing so everybody's aware. We're talking about not adjusting additional personnel, and we're looking here on the forecast on the general fund. Over in quality of life, we do have one more year, the last year of police allocation of 12 more officers. But that's it in terms of outside of the capital improvement people that go with capital improvement projects. That's the only real group of employees that are identified out there to be added in the upcoming future, and that's 12 more next year.
Oh, yeah.
Can I follow up on that a minute, Brian? We have a lot of dropping that's going on, you know, the deferred retirement option plan that that is going to take officers out and we bring new officers in. It used to be in the school district that was not such a bad thing when you got, and I don't want people to leave, that's not what I'm saying, but when you had newer employees, they cost less than older employees. So I'm assuming all that got factored in here in terms of the costs.
We factor in merit adjustments and make an adjustment in that every year. It's somewhat based on historical trends. It isn't an absolute, here's an up, here's a down. We're trying to net it, see what the impact is.
And what we've done on quality of life relating to police officers is that 10 years ago when we started the program, we identified a group of officers, and every year they're paid with that. So they're only halfway through their career, so they're not to that point yet. When they do get to that point, then we'll start to see that switch over. But our allocation to the police department is growing every year as their merit adjustments and things grow.
And that's true out of quality of life, but I'm even speaking out of the general fund. When you lose a lot of people who are at the top end of your pay scale, hopefully you get some balance by bringing some people in, you know, that aren't at the top of their career.
We even factor in a vacancy, basically about $3 million a year. We recognize not every position in the city that's budgeted will be filled. And looking historically, we also try to factor that in, try to make this as realistic as possible on the information.
And that's a great segue to my last question, which is we have had more vacancies, I thought, than we had anticipated, or for a longer time than we had anticipated. Has that helped us at all?
We actually ended 2005-06 about $10 million more than where we thought we would end when we developed the budget. So we get that benefit, but it's really a one-time benefit. It helps us establish a higher beginning fund balance at that point, but it's not an ongoing resource to us.
No, but it could help you with the ending
fund
balance.
It did. In fact, that's why you...
Yeah. Well, but you keep carrying that forward.
Well, what happens, though, is because you haven't hired people, you get so far behind, we're having to be more aggressive now on the compensation side, and so it's eating into that fund balance quickly. While we may carry a higher vacancy rate, unfortunately, some departments are almost forced to carry that vacancy rate because in order to recruit the employees that they need to fill positions, they're having to pay at a higher rate. So to make up for that, to maintain within their budget, they'll have to hold vacancies longer in order to do that. So it's you're right, but then there's always a trade-off in that assumption somewhere, because one of the reasons we have vacancies is because we're 7% behind the market, and so all those things kind of start adding up.
And that's a great point. I mean, that's reflective of what I tell people, that it's frequently cheaper to give somebody you have a decent raise than it is to try and go out, because when you go out in the market, the reset is a whole lot more. Thanks.
I have a couple of questions. We're going to evaluate impact fees, and if we determine that the new methodology is the one we want to adopt and it brings in more money, how does that affect? Where does it come through the budget process?
Where that would come into play for general governmental, for example, for those that are eligible for bonding, what it would do is reduce the general fund's payment towards that existing debt. We've looked to apply those impact fees towards our existing debt. So if the impact fees would go up higher than we forecast, we basically figured every other year there would be an adjustment in the fee. If it would turn out to be higher than that, that would reduce how much the general fund would have to pay for existing debt.
All right, so it's right off the general fund debt payment aspect, so that's a real positive
if it's eligible, it will.
Enterprise transfers, you mentioned you want to get it to 15. What if you don't? What if you do it 18 or some other? Does that create a problem with the amount of money there for the bond ratings, or what if we back off on that policy of trying to get a flat amount and keep the transfers heavier?
If we increase the transfers amount, that would help the general fund, obviously. Right now, the rating agencies are looking at each fund separately, but they're also commingling the net results. So they still may say, well, that's great. This went up 2%. That went down 2%. I don't know that they would change our rating because of that.
Okay. And the other question is, what if the citizens say we don't want slower response times, we want more officers, we want more of the rest, and we're willing to do geo obligation? What's in the forecast? And if it was to be bumped up more aggressive, I assume that would have a direct impact also.
We would have to operationally fund. If they said we want more fire stations and we'll give you general obligation authority to go build it, it's the operational component. You know, it'd be plus $1 million a year for every fire station we add that we would have to. It's not in the forecast to cover that.
Yeah, Mayor, let me just, because that's a very important point. When we talk about secondary property tax, I know the fire committee's heard a presentation on the fire master plan. We want to bring you a discussion about streets and other public safety items. But the difficulty is, even if secondary property tax were approved for new fire stations specifically, which assumes then the personnel to man that station, that's where this model makes it more difficult. We may be able to, if we get a secondary property tax, we can certainly justify the selling of bonds that are going to pay for themselves from the secondary property tax. What doesn't happen until significantly out into the future is once that we've established a dedicated revenue source to pay for the bonds, we won't see the immediate relief necessary to fund the personnel side of it. Unless we take some of that $50 million that's authorized but unissued and use and either not sell it or would be word reauthorized maybe under a secondary property tax assumption, then that may provide some level of relief on an annual basis.
Like Claudia said, the $1.5 million, you don't have whatever, debt service, you have a dedicated payment. Yeah. So the net savings is $1.5 million or whatever we All right. And so what magic bullet pulls out of the hat here? What do you say?
you take all your existing debt, put it under a secondary, and that would give you more resources.
There's your
silver bullet.
How much of that could be restructured under the secondary?
You have the authority right now to place that all under a secondary right now. The voters' adoption of that election gave you the authority to establish a secondary.
Okay, and I think we're going to have several discussions here about going to the voters for a secondary up front. This is what it's going to be used for. So I think we really need to figure out in this budget scenarios that we have, what do we need, what would it be used for, and what's the benefits to the citizens. So that's probably another date, but I think that's our next approach. If we want to enhance the, maintain or even enhance the level of service at all, I think that's our avenue. So, I think the looking out 25 years certainly puts it in the right perspective so people can see. And I think we need to crank some numbers to see what that dollar magnitude would be to be able to keep up with the growth by having staffing that matches growth. And that's where we're lacking right now. We're trying to do it with the same staffing.
Right.
And that, I don't think is... Obviously, it's not sustainable unless you get some, I don't know how you do it.
Don't allow growth.
You could have a moratorium on growth or something.
Certainly.
Other options, too. Mike and then Tom.
What's the annual debt service payment on the $250 that we've got now?
If you look in the, actually, if you turn to the back, attachment 2-1, for example, the general fund portion, the line in yellow is our existing debt service, so you can see what we're identifying as the annual payments that we have to make for debt service. So starting in 07-08, it goes up to $21 million. It stays around $22 million in that range until fiscal year 13-14, when it drops down to around $13 million.
Which chart? 2.1?
2.1 towards the back.
There's 2.1s, but they're...
Yeah, 2.2 is the enterprise. 2.1 is the general fund.
Upper right-hand corner is the...
Clear the very back pages.
But that yellow line in the center is our existing debt service.
It's about 5 pages in from the back, 4 pages in from the back?
2.1, correct?
Yes.
2.1.
5 pages in from the back.
And so...
If you look in fiscal year 07-08, Mike, you see in yellow it's $21,832,031.
Okay.
We've smoothed out the debt service payment through 12-13. Then you see a small dip coming down for a period of time. This is now just the general fund portion.
Right.
But you see it climbing back up, and frankly, we probably ought to establish that, try to manage this at a policy of somewhere in that 22 to 24 million and say that's just anticipated. We're going to just discipline ourselves that that's how much each year we're going to have. We're not going to do as I told these guys, we're not going to do the Joseph and the Pharaoh story where we're going to have years of abundance and set it aside for years of famine. We're going to just try every year to maintain a certain amount, assume in the forecast that's what it can. Now, it's going to, this forecast doesn't do that, but ultimately I think that's how most cities try to manage their debt services, try to have a level payment going out. And we're going to have to take some time to adjust to that point, but we're kind of getting there over time.
But if I can continue, my question then is the 21 in fiscal year 07-08, the $21,800,000 mm-hmm. is based on $300 million in GO obligation.
Well, 50 in plus principle, the yeah. If you turn to the second page, if you look under the second column to the right, the accumulated total. This is the total amount of principal and interest we would have to pay in existing debt out to this point, and it's $305,790,000.
And I know this is something off the top of your head. What type of secondary rate, if it was all transferred to a debt service on the action of this council, which is highly unlikely, what would the homeowner's rate be?
It's just got the, no. It's got the restructured existing.
You're catching me, obviously, like you said. Sure.
I'm testing you, but.
But I would say we would be somewhere around 50 to 60 cents at $22
million. Per $100 assessed.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. Oh, one more follow-up. And so that $21 million would then fund what level of service?
It would provide you a resource of $21 million that would go in the general fund to fund whatever you
personnel
need.
Or capital
again,
improvements.
Again, that's the structural imbalance that we have in Mesa is we don't have a dedicated stream for debt service. I think most other municipalities across the country have a specific dedicated resource for that independent of the operations side. So you're right, Mike, as Councilman Whalen, is that what would happen is then if you had, in theory, if you had a dedicated revenue source to pay back $305 million in P&I, then that literally is two things would happen, I think, in the general fund. One, you would be able to have more operations dollars, but I also think the commitment would be that you would change your structure such that the transfer from the utility fund would dramatically decrease. You know, you wouldn't need that now, and you could then keep your debt service, your transfer from the utility fund at a much lower level, which obviously would affect future utility rates and all that. So
but you could also build your fund balance in your utility revenue account to handle maintenance and
right, and I think we've done a pretty good job of trying to get there on the fund balance right now. On both sides, I think it's just the concern. We have such a unique structure where we're taking from the utilities and moving that into the general fund, absence of property tax, which is a decision that was made many years ago. Now, if we decide to go back and say, no, now for today's growth of Mesa, it may be better to have a property tax, then I think you would offset that by reducing the utility transfer to help offset that. And I think you could, in some ways, you could have that, you know, kind of almost a balancing act of trying to adjust both of them. And then you would obviously have the ability then to manage growth a little bit better within your budget over time.
But a secondary property tax that would handle the current debt plus any new incurred debt on general obligation bonds, either previously issued or to be issued in the future, would then set a rate of about 19 cents to 20, no, 80 cents was the amount you gave me?
50 to 60.
I said around 50 to 60
cents. We'd have to verify that.
Yeah, I'd like a little more time to discuss this. Good answer. If you don't mind.
Let's say between 50 cents and a dollar.
At this point.
And let's not anybody report that number. Right. We will come back and give you a number.
But what that would do would make us sustainable in the future without having to look at a future secondary property tax, or without having to look at a future primary property tax.
But
it's sustainable to a level.
It would, yeah. It would certainly make a significant difference in the model you have today.
You're going to definitely get more resources.
That's true, because you would essentially be able to tap into that $22 million annually that is now going to debt service would be available for operations.
Thank you.
And that matches up because we asked the voters for $30 million. So you're in that range of that's what it needed to be sustainable is what we thought we needed. So let's get the accurate numbers before we run too much, but that's why I think it makes sense. Tom.
Just on the last discussion, then I'll get to the question. I think it's important to understand that whether it's a high utility transfer or whether it's a secondary property tax, there is debt out there that the citizens of Mesa are going to have to pay one way or the other. And what we're talking about right now is shifting, perhaps, but we're not talking about eliminating, lowering, or anything else. It's just I don't want to call it a shell game because that has negative connotations, but it's a potential shift. Is all we're talking about. What I'd like to ask, and I'll adopt the language of Congress to give you guys the permission to revise and extend your remarks the way Mike just did, because it's going to catch you a little bit off guard, perhaps. You've given us a lot of information, but I'd like to get a distillation down to something that's going to be explained quickly. Mm-hmm. And the question is, from basically December through the adoption of the budget this last year, mm-hmm. we had financial forecast that said if the sales tax passes, we would be able to include $650,000 a year escalated for new operation and maintenance. Mm-hmm. We would have roughly six million escalated added to new capital improvement projects. Mm-hmm. And today you're telling us that that forecast is no longer sustainable. That's not going to happen. It's because your adjusted forecast has eliminated those. I'd like you to tell me, and as I said, I'll give you a chance to submit something else in writing, what are the primary factors that have led to a change in that forecast?
Okay.
And two of them come to mind right away. First is the adjustment of the Pinal County Water Farm land sales, going from $50 million in the first 5 years down to $16 million.
That's an obvious one, right.
That's the significant one. The other one that's significant is finding ourselves at least 7% behind the market in terms of salary ranges.
Okay, now, I read the adjustment thing that you said in here. It is the 7% below market. The benchmark adjustment and a 3% COLA are both forecast in?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And is a benchmark adjustment captures how much of that 7%?
The estimated impact of the benchmark right now is for 07-08 is $13.3 million.
The adjustment includes all of that.
Okay, so the benchmark adjustment.
The 7% is where we typically try to establish ourselves within the comparable
the midpoint
market
of the range.
And so I think that's your question.
Captured it all.
Then, and like, because that's why I was trying to make the point. That's where we are at this point in time today.
Right.
And then we're maybe being a little aggressive, but the idea is if we don't want to continue to experience, we're trying to avoid the huge vacancies we're carrying now. It's putting tremendous pressure on the organization. And so making this adjustment plus the COLA in the beginning of the fiscal year, we believe then puts us in a better position for vacancies.
And I understand both of those. And if there are other minor ones, whether they're minor revenue adjustments, I'd kind of like to have a one-page briefing paper, because I think ultimately we're all going to get asked, okay, why is the forecast that you went to the public on in May, that you adopted your budget on in June, is no longer valid? And we need to be able to answer that question both internally and externally. Okay. And so I'd like to have that
prepared. So.
Yeah, just right. You know, one,
Rawls,
one.
I think you know. Though that's on page 26.
It adds up to me, too.
That's it. And I think there was a little bit of adjustment in the, now we're calling the municipal
cost
index for inflation.
Right.
If you said those three, I think, would cover by far the majority of it. But we can, if there's any other smaller ones, we'll get those. But for right now, by and far, those three are the dominant.
Correct? And the 10.7% increase that's projected for the health.
Right, and I count that as inflation.
That's included in the forecast.
Right.
Correct.
Now.
Which it was at 9%. So, I mean, that's a significant
It's a significant jump.
And the compounding factors of all those have been.
You know, and I find that not ironic, but it's interesting to me that I've now been denied two different health care benefits by our plan because we don't do that, you know. So it's not like we have all the bells and whistles on our health plan either. So let's not think that we're out there running. I mean, I can't even get a pair of orthotics for my plantar fasciitis, and I can't even get a colonoscopy done unless I lie to the doctor and tell them I have a change in my stool pattern. So that because I'm serious. I mean, it's we cover $400 on a $2,000 procedure unless it's diagnostically specific. You know, you have a problem, so we're going to do it. But for somebody my age, you ought to have a colonoscopy done occasionally, and our plan doesn't cover that. I mean, so that's not a bells and whistle plan. There's not like we're out there just throwing money at healthcare.
No.
I appreciate that, and if you want to add anything to it, I agree that you've highlighted the three the two I didn't catch the other one, quite frankly, because the numbers have been fairly overwhelming this morning, and I checked out occasionally. But the two big ones, the salary and the
benchmark
and the Pinell County
Water
Farm, and that's unfortunate. We made some assumptions. The market turned, and I don't know that we can't do 10, but I'd rather see us forecast conservatively and then be pleasantly pleased rather than forecast optimistically and then be unpleasantly disappointed. So thank you.
Mayor, I do have a couple more, and I don't. You were looking for the silver bullet, and this by no means helps, but it's a few additional challenges. Just wanted to bring to your attention.
Pile on,
it's not
I
good
can.
Enough already. On page 31, and we spoke quickly about item one, which is our vacancy rate. And while we have reduced about 70 positions since the beginning of the fiscal year, our vacancy rate was 10% to start the year, and we're now down to about 8%. So as Mr. Brady said, there's still a significant pressure on the organization to provide services with an 8% vacancy rate. We have a concern about the continued impact of our retirements. I was provided a number yesterday that 29% of our staff is eligible to retire in the next 6 years. So it's a huge, almost a third of our staff can be gone. Number three is really more, maybe it's just my sense more than supported by fact, but I have a sense that there's a competitive labor market out there, we do know, but that there's governmental service may not be on the radar screen for a lot of folks anymore. It's maybe not an issue that comes when they are choosing careers and things of that nature, and that's a concern. Page 32, under activities, challenges B, and this relates to our mass transportation master plan. We've talked about this one in great detail, and we're going to have more discussions on it. But we've all seen experienced the estimates that are beyond projected estimates for street projects that are beyond what we ever thought. People say, well, your estimates were too conservative. Well, the inflationary adjustments we've seen have been beyond any historical incidents that we've ever identified before. So that's going to make a huge impact on our capital program related to streets as it comes forward. Also remind you that our Prop 400 projects, many of them are more than 15 years outside of the window. If we want to move those up, that's going to cost us additional money that we're going to have to find somewhere in order to advance those projects to really get them to where they may impact the driving public in the near future. Our 3%, 0.3% sales tax really was designed to address street maintenance issues. Just a reminder that construction and reconstruction will require debt. In the issuance of debt, general obligation, we were fortunate in the latest election to have the street bond debt change from a 6% limitation to a 20% limitation. That does give us additional headroom when we go, headroom when we go to the election to allow more bond debt. But again, it's going to be up to the voters at that time of whether they want to do those projects. On page 33, just three more, utility rates, pressures may be beyond what we'd anticipated for the cost of living index, beyond the 3%. We just anticipate, though, we've seen some of the impacts in wastewater and maybe some of the long-term losses there, then that's a concern. But right now we're still predicting 5% for this year or next year and 3% there on out, but those pressures may gain on us. We put in D, fuel cost volatility. Right now we're within our margins because it's come down, but as we've seen, that's a roller coaster, and that impacts us a great deal in terms of all the vehicles that we have out there on the street every day. And then E, just some final notes on upcoming election issues, that we do have home rule out there that expires before July 1 or on July 1 of 2008, that we're going to have to go out and renew our home rule or provide a permanent lid limit adjustment. We'll have to evaluate that and do that prior to July 1 of 08, and then the whole issue on general obligation bonds, primarily for public safety and streets. A lot of information this morning, Mayor, Council. Appreciate your time. We'll provide you with some of the background information you asked for, and would be more than happy at any time if you need any of us, come in, sit down, answer questions, discuss anything.
Okay. If we were to do a special election in 2007, could we put the home rule on early?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Could we find out what the cost for another election would be, and then see if we want to ask about a secondary property tax at that point on any of the $50 million of outstanding bonds, or I think that was kind of discussed today, what might be potentials for that election. So I think it seems to make some sense. And what election dates are still available to us? I know the 08 election, when the council turns over, got switched by legislative action, and I think I'd like to not crowd that, because that's going to be a presidential election too. So I think, and partisan elections, good point too. So let's take a look at 07 to see whether the home rule and some other ballot topics make some sense, and what days are available now, because it's going to come fast.
Yes.
All right. Mike.
Just one more question on the Pinal Water Farm. Your figures on the reduction in the value, is that just a residential site, or is that encompassing also the commercial properties?
Well, what we're trying to do is hedge against losing value, so we've slowed the sales down. It may represent some of that, but what we've done is just not put as much pressure to try to drive the market down in that area.
I understand. It appears, though, that the commercial properties may be more valuable than we had originally thought. So if we were to shift somewhat, would those numbers change?
We would like to be pleasantly surprised.
Okay. And Councilman Whalen, we have some of the prospects that we've talked to on some of the commercial deals. Some of them just by themselves would be enough to bring in almost multiple years that we've got in there. But it goes back to what the Councilman Rawl said, is just I am not comfortable right now plugging that into an assumption that we're going to wrap our budget around early on. I just don't have the sense of the activity level that's turning things over that quickly. If we get to that point, then I'll be glad to bring it back, but then I think we treat it as one-time opportunities, and specifically if we can dedicate it to outstanding debt service or specific one-time projects, but I'd rather have the funds first, then go back and plan the project. I think that's kind of the message we were trying to bring in this morning.
I think it's always been our purpose to buy down debt first, right, whenever possible. And
that
so,
would be the,
and,
yes.
You know, none of us, I don't think, maybe none, I'm speaking for myself, I know several others want to use that land for operational cost at any event.
Mm-hmm. Don't
use the sale of those lands for operational costs for today. None of us want to do that.
Oh, good. Okay.
I think I'm speaking for all of us. Yeah, it's just that's not the way we
right.
factored it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Tom.
On the issue of the Pinal County Water Farm, because it's a constantly moving thing, I'd like to have suggest that at some time in the near future we have a executive session where we talk about the sale progress. What's in the mill? What's not in the mill? What we're because we've sort of been, we get piecemeal presentations, but we don't ever get the comprehensive presentation as to where we think we are at the moment, because obviously staff has changed their opinion, and that hasn't really been projected to us, and it's not something we can really discuss in an open meeting. I think it's appropriate for an executive session, so I'd like to suggest that at some point.
Okay. Claudia.
Thanks. Ditto on the conservative approach. I'd rather not anticipate getting the money. Let's get it and then spend it. Other land sales. We had one at our last council meeting. I think that there's some others that are sitting out there. You've already captured those. I'm looking at
Chuck. If they've occurred, we've captured them.
What about projected?
We have really tried to back off in anticipation of future sales. We're more inclined to not forecast them and take them in hand when they come.
Great. I'm fine with that. But what that means is, because, and this is, you know, like me knowing what's in the box before I open my Christmas present sort of theory of life. Every time last year we went through the budget thing, well, what about this? Oh, we already factored that in. It would be nice to have a few pleasant surprises possible somewhere.
Now, we have factored in $6 million in sales in Pinal for 07-08. So, I mean, that is the one place where we are anticipating.
Okay.
We need that Christmas present.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions on the budget items? Okay. Thank you very much.
Mayor, let me just thank these gentlemen. They've done a great job. They really have. And I would stand them up against any budget office, really, in municipal government. They do a great job. And we know, you heard that. Where'd he go? You already ran out? Oh, there's Jamie. Jamie will be, I don't know if he saw the forecast and decided to retire or what, which came first, but he'll be leaving us in, is it February, Jamie? Into January. So we'll miss him. But Chuck is very strong and has learned under the tutelage of his master, and so we look forward to great things. So, anyway, thanks to them.
Okay. Next item is hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Claudia?
Thanks, Mayor. Last Saturday evening, after I got back from a personal trip to New Mexico, I attended Art on the Move, as did several other council members. It was a nice event, a fundraiser for our Mesa Arts Foundation. Also, yesterday I went to Running and Winning, which was for young women. It was at Coronado High School. It was for young women to get them interested in the thought of running for government positions. It was fun talking to these bright young ladies. And, you know, if they're any indication of the future, I think that we'll have some great women in government in the future. Last night, the East Valley Partnership Economic Forum focused on transportation issues, which are always a good topic of conversation for those of us in the East Valley. I'm going to leave to Tom if he wants to talk about the neighborhood meeting he and I went to. We attended a neighborhood meeting in his district. He said no. So we attended a neighborhood meeting in his district and stood outside and heard a lot of input from the neighbors and got nice and cool. It was cold. It's cold here at night. I don't know if any of you have noticed that. But most of what I wanted to talk about today has to do with a committee that I mentioned before that I'm chairing for MAG, which is required by the federal government. If you might recall, a couple of years ago, I was asked to go to D.C. and do a presentation for United We Ride. At that point in time, the president announced this requirement of all the federal folks that they coordinate transportation. And that requirement was transferred down to state governments and then more locally, and through MAG, the Maricopa Association of Governments, we have a mandate that we have to come up with a transportation coordination plan that takes into account human service transportation, senior transportation, all of those kinds of things, and we have to have a plan, and I'm chairing that committee. We had our fourth meeting yesterday. It was it's very challenging because there are ways that this has been done for many, many years. But what we are seeing is that a lot of the funding for transportation isn't coming through transportation. It's coming through human services, as a matter of fact. They think that there's more of the money that's coming through human services for transit than coming through transit for transit of these people. And you don't get people at the table. So you've got this guy over here doing transit with federal dollars and this guy over here doing transit with federal dollars. And the president said, in order to get this money, you know, you've got to come up with this plan. Now, at the end of the day, the plan can be we're all going to enter into agreements with each other that we're going to talk. We're trying to get something that's a little better than that. What we're looking at right now, at least initially, is probably something that would be a one-call center, so people can call and say, I live in this zip code, and they can say, this is what's available in that area, with the idea in mind, an end goal, years in the future, of having a one-call to schedule that service. We don't think it's viable today to do that, and there are a lot of barriers to that in the meantime, but the political buy-in is going to be very important on this. There are a lot of steps in this, but we're going to have buy-in from all of the councils. So at some point in time, we're going to bring a presentation back here. The big challenge that we have is that we have a huge number of people who are about to be 65, 70, 75, 80, who are going to need transportation services, and we don't have additional dollars. We aren't the only ones who are having these budget issues. Phoenix is having issues. And so we're trying to find ways of making the same dollars do more, do it more efficiently. Thanks, Mayor.
Okay. I want to thank the Vice Mayor for running the last council meeting. I had the opportunity to travel to our sister city in Upper Hutt, New Zealand. I've now managed to go to the four sister cities or five that we have. And I would like to come back and have a study session on some discussions of kind of protocol, just what resources the city should expend, if any, for sister cities, and whether we should keep the existing ones, drop some, change the structure of what we may have been doing in the past as far as the municipal involvement goes. And then what's the municipal involvement, and then what's the citizen involvement? I think we have to define that in better terms before we to avoid any conflicts between the two organizations. So that's what I'm looking forward to doing. I would say that Wayne Guppy, the mayor of New Zealand, is a terrific guy. They're a community of about 35,000, a beautiful location. I'm not sure that we have a lot in common with that community. Their main street looks a little bit like ours did 20 years ago, but it's vibrant right now. They are looking at some things that I think we can assist them with infill and some of the rest of the and zoning. They have no water meters for the residential. So when we said that we actually meter the water, they thought, well, that's interesting, and charge for it. You know, depending on the, so they're, so we threw out some concepts that were just foreign to them. I guess they should have been foreign, but, and so the interaction between the, I was able to attend a dinner with virtually their entire city council and have some discussions about sister cities primarily, but also what we do in Mesa and the regional cooperation. They're outside of Wellington, and some of the transportation and consolidation with the communities and regional planning are things that they're grappling with, as we are constantly in the MAG region. A fun, worthwhile trip. I was glad to have the opportunity to do that. Really some, I think, outstanding news from MAG last night. The Transportation Policy Committee, which was assigned the task of the state legislature had some surplus funds this year, part of which went to transportation acceleration statewide. Of that, about $193.4 million was in the MAG region. So they sent that over to the MAG Regional Council and the Transportation Policy Committee. Because Councilmember Bilstein was out of town, I had the chance to chair that. And with the some of the help of some of our city staff, I do want to compliment Scott Butler for doing a lot of the behind-the-scenes work with the other communities to try to come to some type of an agreement on where the money would be allocated. And we actually came in with a pretty close understanding. There were some communities that didn't agree, but we got a unanimous vote for the distribution of those monies. Mesa is going to be awarded $20.3 million for advanced right-of-way purchases to protect the Williams Gateway Freeway Corridor. And that's kind of the project that we were pushing. I did distribute, and I'll hand out a copy to each of the council members, a map that shows why that's important to us. This is a approved zoning case that's in the right-of-way. It's probably close to a full take, if not a full take. And Tony Bianchi from planning did that map for me, so I was able to justify saying, you know, it's kind of pay a little bit now for land or pay a fortune later to acquire the buildings that are built in the right-of-way, because he does own the property and it's not going to probably be built for, you know, and engineered for 5 to 10 years. But we have identified some critical pieces. I know it's been before council. So this will give us $20.3 million plus $2 million that we had in the pot anyway for right away from last year, and then again another $2 million this year. So we have some right away money, and I hope to use this kind of as a classic example of don't do another South Mountain. If you can avoid it, if you can identify a right away that's obviously going to be needed, don't allow the development to take place, but allocate the money so that you can acquire those parcels. So that's, I just wanted to mention that we were very successful, and I appreciate the staff support and the working behind the scenes that really made it possible for a unanimous vote. The big projects that are on there is the widening of I-10, adding a general purpose lane out to Verado, I-17 going to Anthem, and then there's lots of other projects included throughout the region with HOV lanes and building those out. Ours is the only one really for advanced right-of-way, so I do want to kind of use this as a case study on how much money is saved by doing it in advance. So that was the MAG meeting. And then I was given a news, a magazine here that had a real interesting article on one of our vice mayor. So I wanted to point this out. Look on the web, too. Claudia, you're looking good, so I just wanted to mention that. And those are my updates. So, Rex?
Last Thursday, I got to speak on Channel 15 about they had chose one of the seven hidden wonders of the of Arizona being our cemetery and the memorial service the British put on every year there. Last Sunday, I got to speak on, and last year, Councilmember Whalen spoke at for the 24 pilots that were killed here in training in World War II, British pilots, and they're buried in our cemetery. And every year they do the bagpipes play and the fly, and a lot of the British come back from England even, and the British Council is there. It's quite a moving ceremony, and that's been held every year privately for over 50 years now. So it's one of those hidden wonders that you may or may not know about, but there were quite a few people out there this Sunday.
Okay. Anyone else? Scott?
Few things, Mayor. Thank you. I met for the first time with David Valenzuela with the Williams Gateway Airport. It was just an introductory meeting with him. We're going to be doing a lot of development out around the Williams Gateway area. He clued me into the new route, which I thought was a secret until it was on the headline today, that we may be adding a third destination to Seattle area. So this would be our, like I said, our third city served by the Williams Gateway Airport. That's not done yet, but they're well on their way. Had the opportunity to speak to the Superstition Springs Homeowners Association. We talked a lot about traffic safety in the region. Police department representatives were out there to talk about Operation Drive and Arrive. Folks cannot forget Mesa hit an all-time high last year of traffic fatalities on our roadways, and this year's numbers don't look a lot better. This council and the police department have been working diligently to try to reduce that. We've increased funding for red light traffic cameras as well as speeding cameras. The police department is picking up on their enforcement, and that is all part of the Operation Drive and Arrive. We just ask you people to slow down and take your time getting to where you need to go, especially during the holiday season with Christmas shopping right around the corner. I recommend Superstition Springs Mall, by the way, for those who are watching. So, or any of the malls in Mesa. I love you all.
You don't get a district allocation.
Yeah. All right. You can go to Fiesta then. I've met with someone who may or may not be purchasing the rest of the GM proving ground. The good news is for a little over 8 square miles of area, we're going to have 2 owners. That's the good news. So, and I think by planning this area out carefully, where this area goes, so goes the rest of the region, and this region really is key to Mesa's economic future. The good news is I've had conversations with them about bringing our staff in very early. Sorry, John, it's going to be a long planning process, but let's get city staff in early to work with them on what they're going to put together, what that's going to require from our codes, and build a relationship earlier on so we can get something through that's really going to be a benefit to the community, and we'll be full partners in that process with them, assuming that they finish on the land this year, and we'll have really, I think, something we can be proud of over the decades to come. And I say the best for last. On Saturday, Mesa had its Veterans Day Parade. I don't think people realize how close it was to not happening. We've talked about our budget deficit here all morning today. $30 million we had to find cut somewhere. 100 city services were cut. And part of that, unfortunately, was some of the community celebrations that we have. And all of them, all of them were cut. And Veterans Day, fortunately, our veterans, as they have always done, stood up and answered the call. And we were able to fund that. Frank Alger did a lot of work, and I want to thank him personally for his work on coordinating that. We all found out how much work that is. The Marine Corps League has, as well as others, but the Marine Corps League has vowed to continue this tradition for Mesa for years to come. If you want to send a donation to them, this is now a privately funded, privately operated, permanent funding. You can send a check to the Marine Corps League, and they will put it in a fund specifically for that. Last year, I hear tell that we had 80 entries, and this year we had 81. So privately funded. We beat last year, so thank you very much for everybody who participated, who showed up, and who helped arrange. Thank you.
Okay. Art on the Move has already been mentioned, and the East Valley Partnership presented by Cox yesterday was interesting on the transportation, but I'm just really curious how, when introductions were made, our vice mayor was first and foremost, and then it went down the whole list. That was rather intriguing to me.
They'd seem real simple.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Let's see. Meetings and general information. Mr. Brady. Yep.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder to the council that tomorrow we'll be having the council retreat in the Saguaro Room of the main library. And we'll have continental breakfast will begin at 8. The retreat will begin at 8:30. I think we said that we'd probably go to about 2:30, 3 o'clock, probably before we can wrap up. We'll have a working lunch during that period of time. Then, of course, we have Monday, November 20th. We have our council meeting. We are anticipating, at least at this time, that there will be an executive session item on the Waveyard development, so we'll be either 4:30, 4:45, but please look at your packets to know on that. So we would like to come and just give council a briefing, kind of where we are today, because we've had some conversations that I think we need to brief the council on. And then, of course, that will be followed by the study session and council meeting. We will not be having a study session on November 23rd for Thanksgiving. But we will have the next study session, then will be November 30th. That's all I have, Mayor.
Questions? Claudia?
Not a question. I figured this came under general information. I had a fifth grandchild this week.
Oh.
I had a granddaughter who was born on the 14th to my son Greg and my daughter-in-law Julie.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Right. Do we have any requests to speak this morning? Okay. Then the study session is adjourned. Thank you. Thank you.